Because after I was diagnosed, I was depressed, very, very, you know, alone and fighting this disease in silence. Pretty much all stems from your gut. Seems to be sort of the gateway to autoimmune disease, and not just type 1 diabetes, you know, hundreds of autoimmune diseases. I was health conscious. I was trying to do everything that I thought was healthy. It was a very, very meat heavy, fish, eggs, you know, animal focused diet. I did that for 7 years. Then 2 months into a keto diet is when I really started to have some difficulties. My blood sugars were elevating. Then all of a sudden I started to need more insulin to try bring my blood sugar level back into the normal range. But here's the kicker. This is the scary part, is that no matter how much insulin I was giving, it wasn't budging my blood sugars. They were just stuck. I can't even put into words how bad I felt. Almost immediately went fully plant-based, cut out all animal products. But the results were immediate, astonishingly fast, blew me away. Carbohydrates were never the problem. I thought they were the problem, but they were not the problem. And I'm able to add back literally hundreds, if not thousands, of plant food. You know, the interesting thing about diabetes is it gives you a lens into your physiology. I think our modern world is obsessed with isolating nutrients to the point that we've forgotten how to just live intuitively and just, you know, go back to basics. You know, and the basics are a whole food plant-based diet. There's so much more to health than just exercise more, eat less, as most people say. That's such a simplified way to think about it. And, you know, diabetes gave me this insight into my health, and I'm finally able to live a holistic approach to life that's I'm thriving, you know.
This is Conversations with Changemakers with me, your host, Gary Tirola. Every week I bring you an inspiring leader that is rethinking what it means to be a changemaker. During these conversations, I slowly peel back the layers of the minds of our future leaders that are using their skills to positively impact this world. Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Changemakers, all you beautiful souls out there. This week, again, exciting week, and it's none other than Drew Harrisburg. You might know Drew on Insta as Drew's Daily Dose, or just the 8-pack that you frequently see on the pages of Insta. But Drew, thank you so much for joining today, and I'm so excited to go very, very deep with you.
Mate, thank you. It's my pleasure to be on your show. But you've already upsold me. I certainly do not have an 8-pack. I'll take the extra two. Thank you.
Okay, cool. That's perfect. So, guys, if you don't know who Drew is an exercise physiologist, a sports scientist, diabetes educator, and most importantly, he is a guy that is thriving on diabetes type 1 on a plant-based diet. And a singer-songwriter too. He slams some tunes. So make sure to go check out his singing Insta. But the reason why we're here is really to understand how Drew is changing the world for the better and really living his own journey and explaining to people how to live a good life with diabetes type 1. And it doesn't have to rule your life. So let's get right to it, man. I suppose the big question is type 1, type 2, what is the difference? So many people know what diabetes is, surface level, but really what is the difference between type 1 and type 2?
Good place to start. So diabetes is basically an umbrella term, right? And there's many different types of diabetes that fall underneath that main umbrella. Type 1 diabetes, now that is the one that I was diagnosed with when I was 22 years old. It used to be known as juvenile diabetes. So you'd get it, you know, as a young child. Basically, type 1 is an autoimmune disease. So your immune system attacks your own cells of your body. In the case of type 1, it is the pancreas, and it destroys the cells of the pancreas that produce insulin. So when you have type 1 diabetes, you have to take exogenous insulin, either by injecting it multiple times a day or by using a pump. And I use injections. Type 2 diabetes, whilst the symptoms and, you know, are the same as type 1 diabetes and it's characterized by the same symptoms, the way that it manifests and the pathogenesis is very, very different. It is not an autoimmune disease. So people with type 2 diabetes initially in the beginning still produce their own insulin, but they have a problem with the way insulin works. So they become insulin resistant, which causes high blood sugar levels. So yeah, it's important to understand they're both very different. However, the way in which you manage them both are actually very, very similar. And, you know, it's no surprise that the way you manage diabetes happens to be also probably the healthiest way to just be a normal person. You know,
well, so that's what I was going to say. It's probably the way to live to heal all your lifestyle diseases, all your ailments, all your sicknesses, and get stronger at the same time. So before we get into that, I wonder, so not many people discover they've got type 1 at the age of 22. Normally it's like type 2, I've had a shitty diet, it's cool, and you get tested and it's type 2. Type 1, like you said, it used to be called juvenile. What was the reason you only discovered you had it when you were 22? Were you turning a blind eye to really the symptoms, or did you not experience symptoms?
No, so the symptoms for me only kicked in probably about 6 to 12 months before I was diagnosed. And I obviously lived most of my life without type 1 diabetes. And I had, you know, when you look at the literature around the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, it basically is caused by what's called like a perfect storm, right? So all of these variables occurring at once, which lead to this diagnosis. And, you know, there's many factors that go into it. So to name a few, it pretty much all stems from your gut. Intestinal permeability or leaky gut seems to be sort of the gateway to autoimmune disease, and not just type 1 diabetes. You know, hundreds of autoimmune diseases start right there in the gut. So I, in my particular case, I went on a holiday to South America and I went into the Amazon and I ate a meal that made me incredibly sick and altered my gut microbiome. And after that, only a few weeks after that, I actually got diagnosed with type 1. But I truly believe that the virus or whatever it was that I got affected my microbiome and my gut, caused this leaky gut syndrome. Then you have environmental triggers that can sort of stimulate your immune system to attack these so-called, you know, foreign invaders, such as one of them is milk protein. A1 beta casein has been identified to have a similar protein or amino acid structure to the cells of the pancreas. So your immune system accidentally destroys the cells of the pancreas when it's trying to destroy this foreign invader that happened to find its way into your bloodstream, like a partially sort of digested protein molecule.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all these variables that happen. It all happens, you know, very fast. And then within a few weeks or months, you get this diagnosis. And you know, other factors are if you're not breastfed, your risk is increased. If you don't have a natural birth, if you're, you know, C-section babies have a increased risk. But, you know, and of course, there's sort of like a genetic predisposition that was there. Even though I don't have a family history of diabetes, I've got a lot of autoimmune disease in my family. So, you know, all of those factors come together and boom, there it is.
It's quite interesting because, like you mentioned, it starts in the gut. And a lot of your old Indian sages and people that have been practicing Ayurveda for thousands of years have always believed that health starts in the gut. It's really your first step and your last step. And it's about really changing, again, your diet, your microbiome. And it is the safest way to do it, besides for jumping into meds and the medical industry. Now, I'm all for the medical industry. They're good at what they're good at, but they're very bad at what they're bad at. And meds are unfortunately it's the band-aid approach, right? So it's covering some symptoms, but it really isn't like treating the cause. Now, when you, from what I understand, you grew up quite a healthy life. Your parents were quite healthy. They're both in the medical industry. So you weren't really the junk food eater, am I right? You weren't leading yourself down this path.
No. I mean, I truly, you know, I thought I was a very healthy young guy. I was health conscious. Here's the difference. I was health conscious.
Yeah.
I was trying to do everything that I thought was healthy. In hindsight, a lot of the things that I was doing were, of course, very unhealthy. For example, I followed a Western diet. I definitely had a large amount of whole foods in my diet, but I also ate a huge amount of meat, huge amount of saturated fat. You know, some junk food and artificial stuff, you know, and I was also on antibiotics for a very long time, numerous months for skin problems that I had. So whilst I thought I was doing everything right. I actually really wasn't. I was having tons of dairy, which only later did I figure out is you know, significantly linked to type 1 diabetes. But that's the sort of, I guess, in a way, the beauty of this health journey. You discover all these things, and unfortunately, it was a bit too late in my case. But that's why I like to spread this message and talk to, you know, people like you,
yeah,
who can get the word out. And you know, if there are people out there who have an increased risk for type 1 diabetes or autoimmune disease, you know, hopefully that this information reaches them and they can, you know, make some tweaks to their lifestyle.
Yeah, I really hope so, because I mean, it's interesting that you say, you know, we've lived in the Western world, so there's been so many different modalities, ideologies, diets, fad diets, crash diets, all these kind of things. So at that time, you weren't aware that you were doing the wrong diet. Hey, I can relate. Australia, South Africa, it's very similar. It's a big meat culture. My dad is a butcher, for goodness sake. I've converted him to a vegan diet now, which is insane. And he, because of his diabetes, he had type 2 for 20 years. And it was interesting. He moved over to a plant-based diet, but not, I would say, more vegan diets. It was more like very loaded pasta. It wasn't like your extremely healthy, clean vegan diet. And within 3 weeks, his diabetes was gone, you know? So, and that's type 2. Yeah.
Sorry, I think we have a bit of a delay, but so your old man changed his diet to, I guess, like sort of a transition vegan diet where it's not whole food, plant-based, and he still had great results. Yeah. Even eating.
All he did was remove the animal products. I mean, he only eats at home. He doesn't really eat out. So it's, my mom cooks quite wholesome meals. But I mean, it wasn't like he was still having like loads of pastas, and he still does. And he's literally within 3 weeks, so dropped from, I don't know what measurements you guys use, but dropped from like 13 to 4. So like under the band.
Yeah,
the
same measurement, millimoles. It's exactly what we use.
Yeah.
That's an awesome, awesome transition and a great story. Was he medicated for those 20 years before?
So he was taking like glucophage. I don't know what the similar, he was taking pills. He wasn't injecting. It's like a similar. I mean, it was more like he wasn't experiencing symptoms, but he knew a lot of people. He knew how diabetes took a lot of people down. And he was, he was 68. I mean, he's 70 now. I mean, he's been vegan for, 2 years. So like he knew the symptoms and he did it for diabetes. And I was reading the book on, it's Dr. Neil Barnard, the program for reversing diabetes. I just finished studying nutrition, and I like read that book, closed the book, and I went in the kitchen, and I mean, my dad was 150 kilos, and I was like, I had a whole myriad of things, and the only thing I said to him is, I think there's a way for you to reverse diabetes. I wasn't even sure. And so then when I saw that, it was great. But coming back to you now, you figured this out. And at 22, did you jump straight into like the traditional way of healing type 1, or like what was your first step before you found a plant-based diet?
So there were many steps until I found a plant-based diet. The first step was a simple Google search.
Yeah.
How to...
Oh, dangerous. Type
1 diet. Yeah. So basically, just to give you a bit of context, I had zero clue what type 1 diabetes was. Even though I was already an exercise physiologist and we'd been taught how to create exercise programs for people with diabetes, I knew nothing about type 1 diabetes. So I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know what caused it, you know, when I was diagnosed, but I just sort of dove straight into doing my research. The first thing I did was not the scientific research, it was a Google search, and it was how to reverse type 1 diabetes, or can you cure type, something like that, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing I landed on was a paleo, a forum of people talking, and like anecdotes of people with type 1 saying, hey, I'm managing my type 1 so well. I'm like off most of my insulin. I barely take any insulin. My blood sugar's perfect, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I got to say, that gave me a lot of hope. And that was an important step for me in this journey, because it allowed me to actually try those things for myself and see if I could get those results. And I have to admit, I did. So basically the change from my standard Western diet to a paleo diet was really important because it cut out all processed food. It cut out dairy. It did eliminate grains and legumes and most carbohydrates. And it sort of put me in this carbohydrate range of about 50 grams to 150 grams per day, but mostly whole foods. And the only downside, which I didn't realize at the time, was that it was a very, very meat heavy, fish, eggs, you know, animal focused diet.
Yeah.
Now, when I did go on that diet, I achieved a significant reduction in insulin requirements. So my requirements dropped from about, I had a 70% reduction basically in insulin needs, which was a huge deal because when I was first diagnosed, I was taking quite a lot of insulin. You know, I was eating a diet that wasn't priming my body to be insulin sensitive, and I needed a lot of insulin on that Western diet. Paleo helped a bit. I did that for 7 years, and I really was quite strict throughout that time, but I didn't see any real improvements, you know, from probably year two onwards. So the first year I had some great results, and then it kind of like plateaued. And then, you know, I decided it would be an interesting experiment to attempt to drop my carbohydrates even further and try enter a state of ketosis, because there's a, I mean, you know about this. There's so much buzz on the internet about keto. It's probably, I think, apparently it was the most searched dietary term in any search engine in the world. So this keto diet's really, it's massive.
Yeah, it's massive in every country, yeah.
Massive. So I thought I'd try it out, you know. In fact, Tim Noakes, he's from your neck of the woods. So basically, in the exercise physiology community and the sports science community, he's obviously a big name.
Yeah.
And a lot of, I went to a conference actually, a sports science conference, and his name popped up about his new diet where he's flipped completely from being carbohydrate focused to now a fat focused diet. And that was a kind of like, for me, it sort of motivated me to give it a shot. So yeah. I tried the keto diet, and to no surprises, I got pretty amazing results very fast. So I cut my carbohydrates down to about 20 grams a day. I was barely eating any carbohydrates. I was fasting for very long periods, long fasts, you know, 16, 18, even 20-hour fasts, like day after day, very frequent throughout the week, sometimes five times a week. And my blood sugar levels were very stable. My insulin requirements dropped even further, which blew my mind at the time because I'd already had a 70% reduction and now I'm even further. I truly believed at that point that I was like on my way to curing diabetes.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden I hit a roadblock, which, you know, I didn't anticipate, which was that my blood sugar levels started to slowly increase, even though I wasn't eating carbohydrates.
So how long now was this from when you had turned paleo and keto? Like, what was that time frame?
So 7 years approximately on this paleo approach.
Okay.
Then 2 months into a keto diet.
Okay.
Is when I really started to have some difficulties. So my blood sugars were elevating. Then all of a sudden I started to need more insulin to try bring my blood sugar levels back into the normal range. But here's the sort of the kicker. This is the scary part, is that no matter how much insulin I was giving, it wasn't budging my blood sugars. They were just stuck.
Oh, wow.
At this high level. So I'd wake up in the morning and they'd be very, very high. I'd give a significant dose of insulin and try bring them down. They wouldn't really move much. Then let's say I eventually got them under control and I decided to have, let's say for lunch, a salad, like leafy greens with carrots and, you know, like very low carbohydrate vegetables. Even about the 10 to 15 grams of carbohydrates coming from the salad was requiring a lot of insulin. So I would need a solid dose of insulin just to bolus for the vegetables. Then even further, if I was eating a high protein and fat source with it, like let's say a piece of salmon, I'd have to bolus for the protein and fat as well. So I was basically taking more insulin, eating less carbs, and what my insulin was barely working. So I'd eat a salad and my blood sugar would shoot up to 12. So I was, you know, I was highly concerned. And to be honest, I was pretty scared because I felt like I was getting type 2 diabetes, which is caused by insulin resistance.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why somebody with type 1 can't be insulin resistant. Even though they're different, type 1 and type 2 are different, you can still become insulin resistant to your own insulin you're injecting.
Yeah.
Because something is going wrong. There's a mechanistic problem at the level of the cell.
Yeah.
Right? And I kind of realized that I'd caused some damage doing this keto high fat thing for so long. And I knew that I had to make a change and try something different just to find a solution.
Really. How are your energy levels on the keto, should I say? Like paleo, you must have been fine. You were for 7 years, but keto? Yeah,
paleo was fine. Keto was in the beginning really good. So I did have a very high sort of like cognition, state of cognition, where I felt like zero brain fog. I really felt focused. I could go long hours without eating and feel endless energy. Could train pretty well in the gym. I could do endurance stuff. I felt great. I really did feel good. But when my blood sugars started to go a little bit funny and I started to become insulin resistant, I tried to push through it for about another 2 months. So from the 2 month to the 4 month mark, I can't even put into words how bad I felt. I'm talking like, it felt like my metabolic machinery was like just glued up. Like I wasn't functioning well. You're walking up a flight of stairs. It felt like I just maxed out a set of squats with like 100 kilos. I'm like I felt horrible. I felt like my lactic threshold, I was like on the edge of it all the time, like burning in my legs. Or I'd go to do so a workout that I would do, like pull-ups or something, and just 2 to 3 reps in, my arms were burnt out, felt horrible. I felt like I had to sleep a lot. I was exhausted during the day. I started to like nap in the afternoons. Just I wasn't myself. I really wasn't myself.
That's, I mean, that's very interesting because, I mean, you're a very strong guy. So like you doing all this training and you must have been very scared, like – you didn't know where you were. Like, so where were in this moment where it just wasn't working for you anymore? Like, where did you turn? Who did you look up to? Like, how did you eventually get yourself out of this obstacle?
Well, thankfully, I was documenting this whole experience online, and I was sharing videos, and I was sort of, sharing my keto experience with the world through social media. And an onlooker, an observer of my journey was Simon Hill from Plant Proof.
Ah, amazing. Okay.
Yeah. He lives in Bondi, so do I. So we sort of like, we live in the same community. He was obviously he's a plant-based guy, had been for many years, and he'd been following me on Instagram, watching my keto journey. And he just sent me a message one day saying, he actually sent me the lecture slides of Dr. McMacken, Michelle McMacken from the States, who presented a lecture on type 2 diabetes and how to manage it and reverse and treat and all that sort of stuff. And he basically said to me, hey, mate, have you ever thought that all the fat that you're eating from this keto diet could be making your insulin sensitivity worse and actually making your diabetes worse? And I hadn't thought about that because I thought I was getting good results. And then he sent me these lecture slides. And I looked through them and I saw a few of the studies, and that was the turning point. That was like where I understood that not only was there another way to potentially do this, but it was a polar opposite of what I was doing. So he set me on that sort of road. Then I started to look at all that research that she was presenting. I looked at a lot of the stuff that he was sharing, started to listen to his podcast. And that was it. I literally, within a couple of days, I was like, I have to try this. Yeah. If I don't try it, I'm doing myself a disservice, and I'm doing a disservice to everyone else out there who is following my keto journey and probably copying what I'm doing. Yeah. So I felt a responsibility and a duty of care to everybody else who was watching me, trying this keto thing. So
of course, you've become an influencer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like I was in a position of not power, but I had a duty. I really did have a duty and a responsibility. So, mate, I just dove straight in. I almost immediately went fully plant-based, cut out all animal products. I stopped cooking with oil. And I just, I had to add back in foods that I hadn't eaten for nearly a decade on a paleo diet, these whole grains and legumes. But the results were immediate, astonishingly fast, blew me away.
And so what kind of results did you feel? And experience.
So the whole reason I did it was to manage my diabetes, because if you don't manage your diabetes in the long term, the health complications are horrifying. And after spending 2 months with high blood sugars, I was really scared that if this went on for years and years, I could end up with these, you know, chronic long-term complications. So my entire intention from the outset was get my blood sugar under control, back to a normal level, and regain sensitivity to insulin so that I can manage my diabetes properly. And those were the two things that happened very fast. So every single night for the first probably week to almost 2 weeks, my blood sugars were going low in the night when before they were high.
Yeah.
So I'd have to dial down my insulin dose at night, and I dialed it down night by night by night for about 10 nights in a row until I'd cut my insulin requirement by 50%. So I had this 50% reduction in insulin, but at the same time, increased my carbohydrate intake by 400%. So just a crazy ratio that I'd achieved where I really proved to myself that carbohydrates were never the problem. I thought they were the problem, but they were not the problem. Because now I'm eating 400% more carbohydrates, my insulin requirements have reduced, and my insulin sensitivity became the best it had ever been.
Yeah.
So insulin sensitivity, basically it's a ratio of carbohydrate to insulin. So every time someone with type 1 diabetes eats a meal, we have to look at the meal and figure out how many grams of carbohydrates are in the meal, and we have to dose our insulin appropriately. And when I was on a paleo diet, one unit of insulin would allow me, I could eat 10 to 15 grams of carbohydrates. Okay, so I'd look at a meal, let's say there were 45 grams of carbohydrates, I'd give myself 3 units of insulin.
Yeah.
Then when I was a keto, my insulin requirements were way, way, way higher when sort of the keto diet started to cause these problems. One unit of insulin sometimes would give me 0 grams of carbohydrates because I was having to bolus or give an injection for just protein. So I couldn't even eat carbohydrates and I was giving insulin.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
So that was crazy, crazy. Then when I made the transition, my ratio became the best it had ever been. So it was, I mean, now, like for example, today I had an amazing day of insulin sensitivity. I did do a lot of exercise, but still I could eat after my workout, one unit of insulin could allow me to eat 30 to 40 grams of carbs.
Whoa.
Right? It's mind blowing how the body adjusts to, you know.
I mean, just the ease on life, on the abundance of foods you can eat. Like, you're not restricting anymore. It must have been so like a massive weight off your shoulders as well.
100%, mate, you nailed it. I'm now able to enjoy the foods that I, you know, in the past demonized and thought were the cause of diabetes. I mean, I was so off the mark, and I'm able to add back literally hundreds, if not thousands, of plant foods that at one point were off the menu. You know, yeah. And now they're them a huge amount, loving it, absolutely loving it.
Are you on a very low fat plant based diet? Are you still eradicating oils?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that question because that is actually the key to insulin sensitivity in a sense. It's that if you can reduce your fat intake to a level that is low enough, and according to the best sort of research papers that I've seen, a truly low-fat diet is 15% or less of total calories for the day, which is low. It is low, right? Yeah. And people do struggle to get that. But I'm not talking about general health and stuff. I'm just talking purely for insulin sensitivity. If you want to be able to tolerate carbohydrates to the best of your ability, if you can get your fat intake to about 15% or less, you're doing wonderful things.
Yeah.
I initially took my fat intake to 20%, had great results, but I noticed that the lower I dropped them, the better my tolerance was for carbohydrates. So I am very conscious of not cooking with oils. However, if I'm out for dinner or I go to a restaurant, I'm not anal about it. I'll have a side salad with some olive oil. I'm not, you know,
yeah,
not fussed, but I tend to avoid fried food. And if I don't avoid fried food and I just, you know, go for it and just, you know, have a night of just enjoying myself, I have to face the consequences. And that is, I very, very often will have a high blood sugar as a result of the fried food.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you say that because you, as much as you get the keto campers that are, and we'll deal with that now, that are all for like the science, it works, you know, that go low carb. You've also got a lot of people in the vegan community that are perhaps in it for the animal rights, which is close to my heart as well. But they also sometimes tend to miss the point and a lot of times jump into the fact that like veganism heals everything. But it's, I mean, when you're in the predicament of type 1 and autoimmune, any type of autoimmune, Hashimoto's, whatever it is, you really need to refine and be aware of what you're putting in your mouth. So like fried foods, of course, is not going to work and you're going to live with the consequences. And yeah, processed foods are, man, it irritates me. We live in a world where we've got so many food products in inverted commas for the listeners in the shelves of our supermarkets. And it's just, it's not food, you know?
No, it's food-like. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's not food. You know, the interesting thing about diabetes is it gives you a lens into your physiology.
Yeah.
You know? And for most people out there who, let's say they adopt a keto, they adopt a vegan diet, and they think that anything that's vegan is healthy, and then they go out and eat fried food or processed food or, you know, crappy refined oils or whatever it is.
Yeah.
If they don't have diabetes, they're not getting these insights. So they're not checking their blood sugar. They don't have to administer insulin. So really, they don't actually know what those foods are doing.
Yeah.
All right. And it's easy to be told by a doctor, it's bad for you, blah, blah, blah. But until you see it, which is what I've had the blessing of seeing, when you see those numbers, you start to understand how our body and system works.
Yeah.
And it is so predictable now that I've started this experiment, is that if I combine fats with carbohydrates, for sure, especially fried food,
yeah,
my blood sugar will not be near as stable as they would be if I was just eating whole food and low fat, right? And the science on this is amazing. There's studies in type 1 diabetes where they give subjects a carbohydrate meal, right? Let's say 60 grams of carbohydrates on its own. They give it to these subjects. They administer an insulin dose that should metabolize those carbohydrates, and it does perfectly. The curve is just how it should be. It rises a little bit after eating, comes back down to the normal range. Then they give the exact same amount of carbohydrates with fat and or protein, and they do the same thing. They give the same dose that was meant to be used for the carbohydrates in the first one, and they find that their blood sugars, not only do they not come back to the normal range, but they have this very delayed elevation, right? So an hour after eating the meal, it looks like you're fine. You're on track to having a normal blood sugar. But then 4, 5, 6 hours later, you have this delayed spike in blood sugar.
Okay.
It's such a great experiment to show that the carbohydrates were never the problem, because on their own, they were fine. It was the combination with fat and animal protein, which causes this insulin, I don't want to call it insulin resistance, but let's just say impaired carbohydrate tolerance, right? So those studies are incredible.
You talk about protein, and then you specify animal protein. And isn't it more the effect of, I mean, everyone talks about the animal protein, but animal protein is essentially high fat. So isn't it really just the fat combination with the carbohydrates? I mean, it's not really protein, because if you're taking plant proteins, it's not doing the same, am I right?
Very good point. So animal protein is packaged with fat. There's no way around it. Even if you get the leanest chicken breast that you can imagine, it's going to have, I think it's like 20% fat minimum, right? Saturated fat in even foods, right? But I have even seen studies where whey protein on its own, isolated, with no fat, causes, not only do you require an insulin response, this is I'm not even talking about just in people with diabetes. In healthy, normal people, protein elicits an insulin response.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to understand that, yes, you're right, that the protein and fat combination that happens to be naturally in animal foods, it's hard to pinpoint. Is it the protein? Is it the fat? Is it both? It turns out it's both, even on their own. So you can do this experiment with oils on its own. It'll impair your carbohydrate tolerance. You can do this experiment with a sort of like a whey protein or something. You're going to probably need more insulin. So it really is both. And when I made the transition, I got a plant-based protein, like a protein powder to have after workouts, and I started to eat sort of like a bean pasta kind of thing, where it's like made of black beans.
It's on your stories today. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So even in that dish, I need to give a little bit more insulin for the protein. So protein does have.
So even if it is plant proteins. Okay, so now as a healthy individual with someone not with type 1 or type 2, I find it very interesting. It almost you almost make me want to go buy a glucose machine. So the requirements for a healthy individual, is would you say that it's the same in order for longevity? Like my body, because I don't have diabetes, might be able to handle it more. But is there research or studies out there that in actual fact, over 10, 20, 30 years, a healthy individual can start imploding if they're not cognizant of their combinations?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. In short, I do not know the answer to that. I'm sure there are doctors out there that do. My thoughts are that it might seem like your body can sort of handle it, so to speak, because you produce your own insulin.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you're not still putting an extra bit of a toll on your pancreas to produce that insulin and secrete that insulin.
Yeah, so, sure.
So, look, I don't know exactly where I stand on this. I feel like we as a society probably overeat protein in general.
Hmm.
Everyone overeats protein. You'd be surprised how little you need to be, you know, a healthy, strong, athletic person.
Yeah, 100%.
But I also think that if you're eating mostly plant-based protein,
yeah,
the difference is it's packed with fiber and carbohydrate and not the fat. So I think it's a spectrum, and I think plant-based protein sources are significantly better for you in general.
Yeah, I've always had this opinion because I've gone through this the same kind of tale as you know, like go through school, pumping weights, playing some rugby, drinking protein shakes, the whey protein, like trying to get lean, like this whole like standard Western way of living. And then obviously like figuring out that protein, for me, it was just like a protein myth. And it was just like, I looked at the foods and I had this realization that if I look at a whole food, a food like whether it's off a tree or growing out of the ground or like from some divine way, these foods are growing just like we grow out of our mother's wombs. And if these foods are supposed to be nourishing us and feeding us, the macros should naturally be what we call the macros, you know, the carbohydrates, the proteins should naturally be in the right balance. And a lot of times humans like to cook. I mean, so my fiance is a vegan chef, and she does amazing combos, and I watch her how she cooks, and she cooks in a very like Ayurvedic way of cooking as well. And she healed her autoimmune Hashimoto's on a plant-based diet. So I see how she cooks, and she takes whole foods and puts whole foods together. But if you go to a restaurant, a lot of times they're taking processed ingredients because it's easier, and combining it with whole foods and combining it with lots of salt and extra protein for the mouthfeel, and it's more about the experience in our mouth now. Correct. And I think that's just kind of what we miss. And I've just realized I've been on such a low protein diet, sure, for about 3 years now. And like that was throughout Ironman, it was throughout Comrades Ultra Running, and I've never really required protein. I don't know. I don't know if it's just me, and I'm sure everybody's different, but.
No, I think you nailed it. I think our modern world is obsessed with isolating nutrients.
Yeah.
We've got such a reductionist, zoomed in approach on these tiny mechanisms and this little, you know, we're so obsessed with science to the point that we've forgotten how to just live intuitively and just, you know, go back to basics. You know, the basics are, I think, a whole food plant-based diet is that's the basics. And I think that I still think you can be healthy eating a 90% plant-based diet.
Yeah.
It's just the spectrum where most of the world is on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, of course.
Animal foods are totally overconsumed.
Mm.
We are obsessed with protein in terms of building muscle and this and that. But you just said it, like you're an endurance athlete eating a whole food plant-based diet, and I imagine you feel probably the best you've felt, right? And protein is not even a focus.
So I actually made the transition while I was training for not a full Ironman, but a short distance Worlds. I took the risk. It was like 3 months out, and that's when I figured it out. And then as I changed, the interesting thing what happened with me was, I mean, look, I don't know if I could get fitter at that stage. I was like in my crux right at the peak. But what happened was at my peak, I was still running the same speeds. But what happened, my heart rates moved down 4 to 5 beats a minute. Now for me, that doesn't sound like much, but when you're competing at that level, it was paramount. I was like, I was able to just last 10 minutes longer at that pace, which for me was like, that was the eye opener for me. And that's what kept me into plant-based diets. And then I had to like juggle around my butcher family, which was another story. But yeah, I think I had this argument now, and this is actually what I want to get more of like a scientific understanding from you. A bit of an argument. I reacted on Instagram 2 days ago to someone that's predominantly keto, maybe paleo, quite low carbs, high meat. I kind of get angry when she shares. She's got quite a big influence in South Africa, and she shares like photos of her eating bacon and all this, and all about a healthy lifestyle and binge drinking on weekends. And I shouldn't have reacted, but I did. And the first thing she came back to me was, you know, like, what's the science? I've got science to back up this claim. You know, there's science. And because she was kind of taking the mickey out of Game Changers, the amazing documentary. And she said, you know, like, it's fake science. And in the keto world, there's so much on-point science. Now, here's my thing. I sat back. I was like, okay, I shouldn't have reacted. But I was like, you know what? Like, for me, fuck the science. I've seen experience. Like, we've probably got some good science in plant-based, but I've seen like people heal. So whether the science is wrong or right, surely like the healing aspect is trumps the science in effect. I don't know. Like, what's your opinion on the science? You were in the keto world, so I'm sure you can understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. So some differences that great question. Firstly, the things that trigger you also trigger me. That stuff kills me. It is so freaking agonizing to these conversations and the comment section and this and that. And I've actually chose to step away from it. It's just so painful to watch that stuff. So I've stepped away from that for a while just for my own bloody mental health. But when it comes to the science, what I noticed in the keto world is the science they do, it's not like they don't have any science. There is quite a lot, right? But big but, it's very short term, number one. It's so different to long-term, you know, epidemiological studies, which I think the plant-based community have really good ones, right? Even though most people are quick to throw epidemiology out the window because it's just observational of populations, I think that's some of the best science. You know, what better way to actually look at real people living real lives? You know, that to me, epidemiology is wonderful. Mm. Of course, a randomized controlled trial is sort of like the gold standard when it comes to science, but that's also not necessarily the real world. There's a control group, there's an intervention group, there may be a placebo. Do you know what I mean? So I like the epidemiology. I like to look at real results, right? The other thing about the keto world is if you really look at the funding of these papers and the sort of, I guess, the agendas or hidden agendas, it becomes pretty damn clear. And then you look at the doctors or the people who are promoting it, and again, dig a little bit deeper and you'll see these agendas. Now, okay, it's important also to note that they're not making this stuff up. Like, they also are getting results and they also do feel better and all these sorts of things.
Yeah. And they fully believe it. It's not like they're putting on a show.
Correct. They definitely do believe it. And it probably does work for some people, but we need to see health as this spectrum. If you make any change from a shitty diet to a paleo or a keto diet, yes, you can see results. Even as a diabetic, your numbers can improve. You can come off your medication eventually. You can, you know, have stable blood glucose levels, improved average sugars for the 3 months, reduced insulin. But those markers, they're not necessarily indicators of actually thriving and being healthy. They are, in a sense, those diets are a Band-Aid solution and managing the symptoms of disease, not curing the underlying cause, right? And that's where I think they're going wrong, is that their approaches are very good at managing symptoms in many diseases. I know look, if you look at a forum section or a testimonial section of a paleo website or a keto website, you'll see hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have submitted their testimonial saying, you know, this diet has cured me of this, this, and this, da, da, da. I think they're getting the word cure mixed up with managing symptoms.
Yeah.
Which is a huge thing we need to differentiate between. I did the same thing. I also made that error. Bringing it back to diabetes, a keto diet can manage the symptoms of diabetes very well. It can. In particular, type 2 diabetes. Forget about type 1 because it's a bit more confusing because we don't produce insulin. Let's talk about type 2 in somebody who does produce their own insulin. A keto diet can manage the symptoms. Obviously, you're cutting carbohydrates out, right? But it's not making you more insulin sensitive and it's not reversing your insulin resistance. In fact, the evidence shows it actually worsens your insulin resistance. So then you go and eat a carbohydrate and you have this huge blood sugar spike and then you blame the carbohydrate. But the only reason the carbohydrate triggered a blood sugar spike is because of the fat intake that made you insulin resistant. So anyway, coming back to your question, science can be interpreted in many different ways. You know, science is really just an interpretation of data. You can have the same data, two different groups will interpret it differently because it's so complex, the methodology, the subjects they used, you know, there's so many variables. And lately, I've done what you've done and I've taken a step back and gone, you know what? I appreciate that there's science out there and there's a lot of science showing, you know, important things that we need to know about our health. But what better way to get an understanding into your own health than to try it for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, that the proof is put in, you know, and I since going plant-based, for me, it's irrefutable. It is the best diet for insulin sensitivity. I can't see how any other way of eating can get these kind of results where you can actually eat more carbohydrates and take less insulin.
I'm so glad to be speaking to you and connecting with you because you've got experience in both worlds. A lot of people, for me, I've never done the keto diet, so it's hard for me to sympathize, should I say, with the keto crowd. But now, thanks for sharing that. But now you've got diet that is a massive, massive, massive part of healing. It's a lot to do with it. But what the other side of the coin is, and which is not in the science literature, is how the outside things affect us. Meaning, should I say the inside things affect us? Meaning mindfulness, mental game, sleep, stress that we experience, outside stresses, environment stresses. How does this all affect, if it does, insulin resistance?
Mate. Those things, so when I started, you know, Drew's Daily Dose, my brand, and I have a 5-pillar approach. And mindfulness is a huge pillar. Another pillar is daily living. Exercise and nutrition are sort of the more obvious ones that everyone knows about, but daily living and mindfulness. So all of those things you just said fall under those pillars. So I'll give you an example. So I quickly realized that my blood sugars and my insulin requirements were worse the day after a sleepless night. Then if I had a few sleepless nights, I needed more insulin. I couldn't tolerate carbs as well. So then I looked into the science and there it was. The proof was there that sleep, you know, lack of sleep quality and quantity can actually increase insulin resistance. And then you look at like shift workers who work, you know, maybe in a hospital or something, they have higher rates of type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. So sleep was connected. Same thing with stress. So I used to surf and I used to like surfing. I used to go out in sort of big waves, right? The simple adrenaline response that I would get from surfing in big waves would spike my blood sugars. Or for example, you know, an incident on the road, like a car cuts you off or there's road rage or something, even that would spike my blood sugars. So I started to notice all of these things where I was allowing these day-to-day lifestyle, you know, triggers ruined the way I was managing my diabetes. For example, I was putting myself in situations where my blood sugars were spiking. So unfortunately, I started to dial back off surfing in big waves, and then I'd make sure that I was mindful and conscious when I was driving and not allowing other people to affect me and, you know, cause my diabetes to go out of control. Coffee or caffeine intake can increase your blood sugar levels and partially interfere with insulin signaling. So, you know, I got these insights day to day and it's made me a better person, diabetes. It has literally made me focus in on every single aspect of life. And now, you know, I cherish everything. Like my morning routine is like what I call like the most important hour of my day, or 2 hours of my day, where I center myself. I get outside, I enjoy some nature, I see the sunrise, I swim in the ocean, I walk my dog, eat a, you know, if I'm hungry, I'll eat breakfast, if not, I'll fast, you know. But the point is, I put aside this important time of the day to get myself in the right mindset to be productive and to have a healthy day. You know, it's, there's so much more to health than just exercise more, eat less, as most people say. It's such that's such a simplified way to think about it. And, you know, diabetes gave me this insight into my health, and I'm finally able to live a holistic approach to life that's I'm thriving, you know.
Isn't it beautiful how when we start cleaning out our life, cleaning out the closet of our bodies, how we gain this clarity of understanding who we are and like I'll tap into our intuition, really. And that's kind of what got it to me. I've now stopped competing in Ironman and triathlons now, because what I was finding was the exercise of it was great for me. But my mental space was, I was in this mental space of comparing myself to others and competing and being this individual in a community-based society. So for me, it didn't work. For other people, it works. I've started practicing yoga and like bringing more mindfulness. And my biggest thing was when I changed to a plant-based diet, I started becoming more aware of other things, because I was alone on that path. Like going plant-based 5 years ago, just like, I suppose plant-based before it was cool, you know, like now everyone is and there's documentaries, but it was like when you're alone on the path, I think you have to start discovering who you are, like start tweaking and like, how do I get healthy? And it's true what you say, like morning routine, it's you calibrating every single day. Like what's going to work for me today?
And type 1 diabetes is, it's truly a full-time job, and I can't stress that enough. You are injecting insulin many times a day if you're not on a pump 24/7. You're checking your blood sugar 15 times a day if you're not using a continuous glucose monitor that measures you 24/7. Everything you do, everything you eat, when you exercise, how you exercise, every time you leave the house, you have to be planning for – what are my blood sugars going to do? What's this? How's this going to affect my blood sugar? Do I need to eat food now? Do I need to have jelly bean? Do you know? There's so much to think about. But the beauty is, if you're conscious and present, is that all of this information is data and it's information which is going to give you insight into what are the things that are good for me, what are the things that are bad for me, how should I be living my life to really, you know, be healthy and thrive. And that's why I actually hate saying this, but in a sense, diabetes was a blessing, because it's made me for sure a more conscious person. It's made me so much, just a better overall person.
Yeah.
But in particular, since going plant-based, and I think you'll probably find this is what happened to you as well. A plant-based diet or a vegan lifestyle, it's not about you, really. It's about way more than you. You know, it's about the environment, it's about the planet, it's about the world, it's about the animals. It's kind of like a keto diet and a carnivore diet is probably the most selfish diet on earth. And then a plant-based diet is probably the most selfless in a sense, even though you get a huge amount of benefits, of course, obviously it comes back to yourself and you feel your best. But what I mean is, like, when you look at the bigger picture, your impact on the world is so much more positive than when you're following this like selfish carnivore keto way of living, you know.
I can relate. It's so true, because it's again that reductionist model. You're getting away from the reductionist model, because reduction is cool. You might be able to sort out symptoms on a keto diet and you'll feel great and have energy and get strong, but it's not benefiting anyone else in your vicinity. And I live by the tenet that, like, what's the harm in trying a plant-based diet? Like, there's nothing you're not going to get. You're not going to lack anything. You might lack the thousands of restaurants around you, but we're getting there. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Bondi, but I mean, we've just done a trip around Europe, and you'll be surprised at the cities that you think would have nothing, and they're like the biggest vegan cities. It's mad.
I think the world is changing, and I think that, like you said, you were doing it before it was cool, but I think now it's we're at that point where it's like it's certainly gaining a lot. There's more eyes and ears out. People are listening. You know, just going back to what you said before of like, so what's the harm in trying a plant-based diet? The problem is the information that the other groups are circulating is that it is harmful and actually makes you sicker, and that you're lacking key nutrients, protein is incomplete. What about B12? And you're going to lose your muscle. And that's the problem, is that there's so many myths out there that are getting circulated in those other communities. You know, people like, you know, you and I, and I'm sure thousands of others who are listening have probably had the same idea as us. What's the harm? Let's just give it a crack. But I know a lot of people in those other communities that think they truly believe it is harmful.
Yeah.
And they're even going to the point where they believe that it's harmful for the environment.
That blows my mind. It really blows my mind. That like, I've got someone very close to me that works for an environment organization, and literally believes that plant-based, a vegan world will destroy topsoil, will destroy everything. And I have to hold myself back so hard, man. It's like, where's the connection?
Dude, not only does it for me lack logic, but I'm pretty sure that there is seriously good science out there. Simon Hill from Plant Proof looked into this topic. I don't know if you ever read his blog post on this. It was a very detailed blog post.
I haven't. I'm going to look for it.
You've got to read this. It's probably read it many times because it's very detailed and it takes a while for it to all sink in. But he looked into this and he used, you know, some experts that helped him source information. And it seems like the evidence is out there that a plant predominant world, you know, is better for the planet. Yet we still have people saying that it's the worst thing for the planet.
Yeah.
You know, I can't get my head around it. I try not to even have that debate because
it's a deep dark hole.
Oh, it is, mate. It is.
So I want to thank you for sharing your story. It's very inspiring. And like I said, I'm going to keep saying this because you've lived in both worlds and you're thriving now. Like, I mean, people can go look with their own eyes. They can, luckily for Instagram, you're able to see you are thriving and you're not hiding. I mean, you're having this beautiful, not just that you look healthy, you're happy. And I think that's what we all strive for. It's like we're all using different methods. But at the end of the day, the keto guys, the vegan guys, the paleo guys, whoever you are, we all just want to be happy. That's the truth to it, really.
That's so true. And a lot of my happiness stems from, there's multiple things, but a lot of it is the ability to serve other people.
Yeah.
And this approach, I feel like I'm able to influence and help people to find this way, and I feel like I'm serving them in a great way. But even more of my happiness comes from the feeling of, how do I say this, just content and knowing that my impact on the world is more positive. My footprint is smaller.
Yeah.
I'm eating far less animals. I am eating more plants. I am hopefully contributing towards far less of this, you know, environmental catastrophe that's going on. It's just that's where my happiness is coming from now. Whilst before it was, I've always been a happy guy. And if you can look back at my Instagram and scroll back to when I was even keto or paleo, I still looked happy and I was.
Mm.
But it was a different happy. It was a selfish happiness.
Mm.
I was happy about me, a lot about me, but now it's a lot more external. Now my happiness is about the world and the environment and what I'm doing and helping people. Here's my dog. He's about to interrupt us.
Oh, amazing. What's your dog's name?
You've never heard name's Dennis. He's got his own Instagram, but if you've never heard him talk, it is truly the funniest thing.
No, I just heard, I think it's your permanent story where you're on the beach, or it's your story today. Oh, yeah, that's great.
I think it was today.
Yeah,
he is just a funny dog. He became famous because there was a media account called the Dodo who made a video about him. It's like an animal media, and it had 25 million views, and he just blew up overnight. So he's now got pretty good Instagram following himself.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. brother, I always round out every episode with five fire questions. So I'm going to shoot them at you. One word, one sentence, whatever you feel comfortable with. But let's see what you got. Number one, what is the biggest tip that you can give people to live a wholesome life?
Kickstart your day with a healthy morning routine. First 1 to 2 hours after your day, get that sorted. Get a bit of nature, get a bit of movement. Just connect with yourself and the world, and then every decision and choice you make thereafter will be more positive.
Amazing. What do you think the soul is?
Ooh, bro, that's a big question. Wow. What do you think the soul is? Oh, mate, I think there's frequencies in the world that I think as humans, we try to like take control. And I think that there are frequencies out there that are way out of our control, and we just need to sit back and let those frequencies run their path. We have far less control than we believe.
Complete the sentence. The world needs
more people living a life aligned with their values.
What is the purpose of the human experience?
To serve others by becoming your best self.
And for the last one, how important is human connection and why?
Yeah, human connection is, now this is something that personally I now know how important it is, because after I was diagnosed, I was depressed, very, very, alone and fighting this disease in silence. And I shelled up and I mean, I needed to, find my new identity and discover myself again. And it took me a couple of years of being literally on my own, living alone, no partner, no friends. I was not myself. And even though I got my body back to looking good and I, all these external superficial aesthetic things, I was empty until I refound connection with human beings through social media, through my family, my friends, partner. That was key, that was something that brought me back onto this path and allowed me to just become an even better version of myself. So from a personal level, human connection was a huge part of my healing.
That's so beautiful, man. Where can people connect with you? If they want to connect with you over the internet, what's the best place? Email, Instagram, where are you at?
So Instagram, I'm pretty active on, Drew's Daily Dose on Instagram. I have a website as well where I sort of have some blog articles and things, and, you can inquire to, have a consultation. I do some online consulting, just kind of like what we're doing right now, get on a Zoom call, have a chat. Website, Instagram. I have a Facebook page, which I'm less active on, but anywhere online. And I always go through my DMs and I try to get back to everyone. And I love getting messages from people, sharing their experiences, and I'm always trying to engage with the community, so please reach out.
Awesome, man. Guys, all the links are in the show notes. Reach out to Drew. The guy knows more about diet for diabetes than most doctors out there. And if you just want to have a cool conversation, he's your man. Thanks so much, Drew. I really appreciate it. For me, this was kind of a life-changing conversation. I mean that because I just feel more connected. Makes me feel more connected to the world, that there's people out there with the same kind of mentality as me, and living it truthfully. So thank you.
Mate, likewise. Honestly, I love talking to you, and I agree. It's funny how, isn't that amazing how the internet can allow us to connect, from such a distance, South Africa to Australia. But mate, it's awesome. I couldn't agree more. It's so good.
So great. Thank you so much. And listeners, I'll check you next week. It means so much to myself and my change-making friends that you decided to spend some of your valuable time with us. It would mean even more if you could share their inspiring message to your loved ones. As someone once told me, the only thing more powerful than changing the world every day for the good is doing it with a community. Guys, I love you and I cannot wait to welcome you back next week. Remember to reach out to me directly at hello@garytirola.com if you have any questions, or hit me up on social media, Gary_Tirola, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm here for you. So let's do this together.